FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is February 13th, 2019, and it's time for another Triple Lutz Report. This is episode number 466. We're going to be talking about a couple of interesting subjects, a commentary I just wrote called They're Voting With Their Feet, and also the passing of a legend of a real anarchist slash libertarian in Australia who you probably never heard about. So questions, comments, be a part of the show, kl@kerrylutz.com. So look, the tax deal, Governor Andy Cuomo was just at the White House begging Donald Trump to raise the limitation on state and local taxes, aka SALT. And the tax law, you've heard the show before, we talked about it, limited it to $10,000 for both real estate taxes and state income taxes. So he's too late. It doesn't matter. We're seeing an exodus. They are voting with their feet. And upon passage of the new tax law, FSN foresaw a human exodus from high tax to low tax states. The left would like you to believe that people move to Florida, they move to Texas and Tennessee for the weather. And nothing could be further from the truth. Yes, weather is a factor, but people move to Florida because there's no state income tax. They move to Texas for that reason. They move to Tennessee, to Washington State, even to places like New Hampshire. If you don't care about the weather and you're in Massachusetts getting taxed to the hilt, you move to New Hampshire, which is right next door. You're 2 hours from Boston. You can go have fun. And Cuomo has got a $2.3 billion budget gap. He's saying it's because of direct result of the $10,000 limitation per annum on deducting state and local taxes. And from our perch here in northern Palm Beach County, Florida, we're witnessing overtaxed Northeasterners migrating en masse to our corner of paradise. In our newly built community, the number of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut license plates is astounding. It appears that anyone who could flee has moved here. Florida has experienced a 5% population spike since 2015, when it pulled ahead of New York State to become the third most populous state in the nation. It's over 21 million people, legally, I guess, citizens of the U.S. living in Florida. I can't even imagine how many illegals are here, probably a million or 2 million. And this process isn't unique to Florida. It's being repeated in income tax-free states like Nevada, Washington, that provide a haven from overtaxed and regulated, overregulated California. And they're experiencing high growth rates as well. And this isn't a new trend. It's been going on for many decades. And the SALT limit has simply exacerbated it, made it more extreme. We will get a more exact idea of the law's impact when we see the results of the 2020 census, when the high tax states' losses become even more apparent, their population losses, I should say. And that translates directly into tax losses, tax revenue losses. California's Governor Gavin Newsom, he has yet to fess up like Governor Cuomo, but expect it soon. The evidence is overwhelming that many Californians are emulating their Northeastern brethren in rushing for the exits. Nationally, the prime beneficiaries of this migration are the states that charge little or no income tax, no personal income tax. And this includes Florida, Texas, Tennessee. Arizona has a state income tax. It's low. Nevada, Washington State, South Dakota, Alaska, and New Hampshire. And, you know, not many people are fleeing to South Dakota and Alaska. Let's face it, nobody wants to go there. But all the other states are booming, even Washington State, which is a complete mess, a liberal hellhole. But they still haven't broken down, started with a state income tax, and they probably never will, because Connecticut was the last state to add an income tax. It has experienced the lowest growth rates of any state, the lowest employment growth rate. I think they passed it in 1981. Worst mistake they ever made. The state was a low tax state prior to that. It has gone down the tubes, and it shows no promise of reversing. And, you know, liberalism's runaway costs have become impossible to hide. We've been predicting this course of events from the moment the tax law was passed. The so-called working rich, such as attorneys making $500,000 or more per year, got hit squarely between the eyes by the new tax law. In New York City, we often have encountered people making $500,000 to $1 million per year, living almost paycheck to paycheck. Usually they are employees who don't have the ability to write off many expenses. They pay huge state income taxes and high real estate taxes to boot. They've also gotten hit because on new homes, you can't write off interest on a home mortgage over $750,000 per year. And, you know, it's kind of a shame that in people, high income people, high earners really are getting like hit on this, but they're the high earners in low tax, rather in high tax states. They're not the high earners in low tax states. You know, in Florida, no income tax. Somebody has a huge house worth several million dollars. They might pay $25,000 per year, $30,000 in taxes. So they come out behind another $15,000-$20,000 in terms of deductions. But the top rate went from 39.7% to 37%. So maybe they make up some of that. You know, it's really directly the fault of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, their refusal to negotiate with their Republican peers. And this is the direct cause of this disaster. Had they been willing, the limitation on SALT could have been raised to $25,000 to $50,000 per annum. Their recalcitrance has done a great disservice to their constituents, but unfortunately, most Americans are not well informed enough to hold those responsible accountable. Instead, they will hold President Trump personally responsible for this state of affairs when it's their own reps who were the proximate cause of the disaster. And look, I'm not going to pass on the wisdom of limiting this deduction because it's more complicated than the ongoing debate of high tax versus low tax states. For decades, low tax states were subsidizing effectively high tax states. There's an argument to be made as to the equity of eliminating or limiting the SALT deduction. For decades, having been a resident of the People's Republic of New York, I personally profited really isn't the right word. I lowered my effective tax burden by being able to write off the SALT taxes. Now I'm in Florida, so it would really be hypocritical of me to come out in favor of the limitation. And in the end, we can all make our own judgment calls as to the law's fairness, but the effects of its passage were quite apparent from the beginning. And so is your choice. Stay in your high tax state and continue to subsidize rampant corruption and incompetence, or flee to a low tax state and keep a lot more of your hard-earned wealth. Decision's pretty simple. stay there. And we all have reasons why we have to stay: family, career reasons, schools, etc. In the final analysis, people who want to get out when they can get out, like myself, they leave. So here is a great article about a guy by the name of Prince Leonard, and he founded Hutt River Province in Australia, which isn't really a province. It wasn't recognized by the government. And his real name was Leonard Casey, and he succeeded from Western Australia's Midwest, and he created the nation of Hutt River. He was 93 years old, and they've got this term in Australian English called a stoush, S-T-O-U-S-H, which means a fight or a confrontation. Could be physical in nature. I never heard the word until today. So I never heard of this guy until today. I never heard of the word until today. Hey, by the way, if you're listening to this on YouTube, if you are listening on a podcast, I urge you to please subscribe, like, and share. It really helps me out a lot when you do that, because it gets the show out more popular, brings the message to more people who really can use it. So subscribe, like, and share. Really appreciate it. Hey, by the way, we're sponsored by Jason Hartman, jasonhartman.com. And if you're looking for real estate to invest in a safe and time-proven way, then you really got to go over to jasonhartman.com. I can help you do it. I am an investment counselor for Jason Hartman's company. You can call me direct at 714-820-4230. Email me kl@carrylutz.com. We got some incredible properties for as little, less than $100,000. Some of them are pre-rented, cash flowing already. You make, on average, you can make as much as 10% cash on cash return, meaning if you put $100,000 in, you will make $10,000 a year in cash. Got tax benefits, so many benefits to doing it. We've got management solutions for you. So again, just email me kl@carrylutz.com or call me 714-820-4230. So this guy, Leonard Casey, amazing guy. He had a legal battle with the Australian Taxation Office for years, and in 2017 was ordered, along with his son, to pay $3 million. That's 3 million Australian, so it's probably about $2.25 million US. And so because he didn't want to pay any taxes, he says, "Hey, I live in Hutt River. You know, I'm not part of you. I don't owe any taxes." But of course, the government doesn't buy that. So he got into this tiff, this stoush, with the Australian government because there were wheat quotas, and he had 13 acres of wheat, and for 20 years he'd been producing wheat. And in 1969, there was a 10% reduction fine. Then he gets his quota, and they tell him, "You can produce 100 acres of wheat." So he was a little bit upset about this because the government is shutting them down. These subsidies that existed, you know, you wind up, if you do subsidies, then you get too much production. So you have to create quotas as a result. You know, I think Milton Friedman said it best: if you subsidize something, you're going to get too much. And if you control the prices, you're not going to get enough. And that's exactly what happened in Australia. So he rebelled. He said, "I'm not going to put up with this." And he was a tax war hero, literally a tax protester. And, you know, his tax dispute went back for 40 years because the Australian Tax Office, that's the equivalent, the ATO, our IRS, three scariest word letters in Australia, the province declared war on Australia in 1977 for a few days. He said, "We're going to war." I mean, I don't think that would have worked out too well for Prince Leonard, but his son kind of is going to carry on the family tradition. His wife, he called her Princess Shirley. She died in 2013. She was a self-described mathematician, physicist, had privately published a number of research papers and books, developed an educational shrine to his wife. I mean, you just can't make this up, but people do crazy things when the government tries to screw them over. And this guy, you know, he never took up arms, threatened to, but you gotta appreciate what Prince Leonard did, because it's hard to find people who will really just rise up against the government. Kind of reminds me of my father. In World War II, he was a hump pilot. He flew B-24s over the Himalayas, over Mount Everest. And when he started, they were cycling war materials, food, things like that. Towards the end of the war, when it was winding down, he's there. He's flying in vats of ketchup and mustard, feminine hygiene products, condoms. And one day he woke up and said, "I'm not risking my life to fly this stuff in a corporatist endeavor to build American brands. I'm not going to die doing this," because it was a really hazardous run. You know, he weren't in a pressurized cabin, ruined his health. So he set about finding things in every plane that he was charged with flying, why it couldn't fly, why it wasn't airworthy. And when he couldn't find something, he would take it out to the end of the runway, blow out an engine, sabotage it in some way. And they're saying, "Well, we know what you're doing, you know." And he said, "Hey, I'm ready to fly anytime you give me an airworthy plane, but none of these planes are airworthy. I'm not flying them. No way." And there were times when he told me he looked at planes and he said, "I ain't flying that." And the plane didn't come back. It crashed. So he was obviously onto something there. You know, the captain of the plane, the pilot, he decides whether or not he can fly or not. Obviously, you got to have a reason. And this went on for a period of months till finally they just sent him home with an honorable discharge. He had flown enough hours. You know, what I didn't say, it was like catch 22. It's like, hey, in 2,000 hours of flight, after you do that, you get to go home. And then he's almost there, and they raise it to 2,500. So they did that the second or third time, and he said, "The heck with this. I'm not flying anymore." But if you didn't fly, you went to jail. So he had to find other more devious ways to fight the forces of the combine. And he fought the army, and he actually won. Not many people around here could say that. So Prince Leonard, rest in peace. We appreciate your fight. You did a great thing. We really do appreciate your sacrifice and your efforts fighting the forces of stupidity, the forces of waste, the forces of corruption, the forces of inefficiency. Whatever your motives were, you are a hero and we salute you. And speaking of the forces of idiocy, stupidity, corruption, inefficiency, waste, look at the Democrats' field of nominees, the green, you know, the whole green thing. It's totally absurd. The new Green Deal. The old New Deal was a bad deal. It kept the Depression going for 10 years instead of the couple of years it would have otherwise gone for had the government just kept its hands off. This is a fact. It's been proven by economists. So a Green New Deal is just going to put the country back 20 years. It probably will never recover from it. Thank you, AOC. And especially when you pay the people who are unable or unwilling to work, you're going to provide them with a living standard. Isn't that a wonderful thing? I think we just need more of that. And AOC, you're doing great work. Keep it up. You're guaranteeing that President Trump will be reelected. Not that I necessarily think that he's going to do anything either. I wrote an article a long time ago that Trump cannot save us. We have to save ourselves. The one thing I will say about President Donald Trump is he has specifically come out and said Western civilization has put the world where it is today. It has allowed standards of living for large numbers of people, billions in the middle class, that they would have never otherwise had the opportunity to experience. It's worth saving. Trump, love him or hate him, is the savior of Western civilization. And if you don't believe it, just take a look at the forces that are trying to put down the United States and that are destroying Western Europe. Eastern Europe is our partner in protecting and preserving and assuring the continuity of Western civilization. The Chinese want it gone. The Russians want it gone. The Muslim nations of the world wished it never existed, and they're only too happy to stick the knife in wherever they can. The only politician out there defending Western civilization is Donald Trump. For that, we owe him a debt of gratitude. You have to take your saviors wherever you can find them. He might not be ideal. He might have many limitations, as do all humans, but he is the savior of Western civilization. The left is trying to destroy it, bring it down. Whatever symbol of Western civilization, of Americanism that they find issue with, whether it's the family, they've destroyed the family, they've destroyed so much. They are just a force for destruction. Never forget that. Anytime you listen to them speak, ask yourself, is this going to help further Western civilization, or will it further erode Western civilization? And don't say that Western civilization is not worth preserving, because your very standard of living, your position, your life is far better off with Western civilization than without it. Of course, there were travesties that took place. There were genocides. All of these things took place, but that does not undermine the advancements of Western civilization. The recognition of its shortcomings is one of the great things about Western civilization. You don't see the Muslim states, the Middle East, recognizing Muhammad's weaknesses and saying, we got to make it better. We have to improve upon it. You don't hear China really getting very critical about their past, about their emperors, about Mao Zedong, about President Xi. You don't hear any of that. It's everything is perfect. The state is supreme. You will obey. The thing about Western civilization is it's the only system that was ever created to further the interests of the individual, to protect your rights, to protect the individual's rights against the government, at least as far as it developed in the United States. For certain, the government was simply a mechanism created to protect the rights of the individual, to serve the individual, and limitations were imposed deliberately by the founding fathers to ensure that Western civilization, that the government, would always remain subservient to the individuals as a whole. Unfortunately, from the very get-go, there was a war between those who wanted to exalt and bring to dominance and prominence the state, and those who wanted to maintain a loosely constructed system for protecting rights, settling disputes, protecting you from fraud, and protecting from enemies within and without. Unfortunately, the scale of the government, the scope, and its functions fell prey to the expansionist division sect of the early country. And I'm not talking about Alexander Hamilton, really. He was, a lot of what he helped impose was really required. Perhaps it was central banking that really was topped it all off, the First Bank of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States. But really, the things that they did back then were very limited in scope and in power compared to our central banks of today. No, rather, it's been a gradual erosion by those who believe the government should do more and more and more, protect all rights, protect every citizen against any possible infringement of their rights. That wasn't what the government was created to do. And you see this when you look at all the functions the government does today, Social Security, welfare, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. None of that was constitutional. None of that was in the Constitution. None of it should have been allowed. But yet that's where we find ourselves today. I don't want to get into the discussion of what programs should be cut out. Probably 80% of them. The large standing army, maybe it's a necessity, maybe it isn't. Maybe we've created the necessity for a large standing army by creating a large standing army. Those are all legitimate topics for debate. Just to understand that everything you have today, everything you are, is due to the preeminence of Western civilization and thought. And it's under attack now. I think it is losing. I'm not sure that anything can save it, but at least somebody finally has stepped up to the plate and said it's worth saving. We need to preserve it for the good of the world, for the good of the countries that are part of it, and for the individuals who are part of these societies. We'll leave it at that. Anyway, it's been another Triple-Let's Report. Kerry Letts signing off. Don't forget to check out jasonhartman.com. You can call me, email me with any properties you're interested in, kl@kerryletts.com. And don't forget to go over to iTunes. You can just go to the iTunes store, put in Financial Survival Network or Kerry Letts. You'll see the show there. Click subscribe, that button about 8 times until it finally says you're subscribed. That's just an annoyance with iTunes. But then it'll get delivered to your computer automatically anytime a new show is released. And hopefully that's worth preserving too. Till the next show, we will talk to you then. Thank you so much for tuning in.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.